It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 45 degrees with a light rain falling. At the airport, they are not indicating any wind speed, and they have 7 miles of visibility. Look for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day, partly cloudy skies overnight tonight, and mostly sunny skies tomorrow. Not much in the way of wind in that period. Coming up on the Midday Report, a landing craft capsized off the coast of Narrow Cape on Saturday. Coast Guard rescued 2 people. No injuries reported. And leptospirosis is a serious canine disease in the lower 48. Could it be coming to Alaska? Plus, gubernatorial candidate Shelley Hughes talks to KMXT's Catherine Irving. And GCI lines went down across the Aleutian Chain, affecting Larsen Bay.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. and Iran may have a tentative agreement to extend their ceasefire and start nuclear talks pending President Trump's approval. But in leading today's White House press briefing, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent did not confirm reports that negotiators had agreed to a memorandum of understanding. A Mississippi inmate has a new shot at getting off death row after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in his favor today. Terry Pritchard, who is black, has spent 20 years legally challenging his conviction on the grounds that the jury selection process in his trial was racially biased. Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Will Stribling is following this case.
Terry Pitchford was sentenced to death for his role in a 2004 Northern Mississippi grocery store robbery that ended with his friend killing the owner near Grenada. The jury that convicted Pitchford had 1 black juror and 11 white jurors. Pitchford's lawyers argued prosecutor Doug Evans improperly struck black prospective jurors from the jury pool. Courts have found Evans had a history of dismissing black jurors for discriminatory reasons. The Supreme Court, however, did not rule on whether prosecutors intentionally discriminated. Instead, the 5-4 ruling finds Mississippi's courts failed to properly handle Pitchford's jury discrimination challenge. The case now returns to the lower courts. For NPR News, I'm Will Stribling in Jackson, Mississippi.
The Justice Department's open an investigation into whether columnist E. Jean Carroll perjured herself in a deposition tied to civil lawsuits against President Trump, according to a source speaking on condition of anonymity. In separate judgments, Trump was found liable for assault and defamation and was ordered to pay a combined $88 million. With a growing Ebola outbreak in East Central Africa, NPR's Ping Wong reports the Trump administration says it's setting up a facility in Kenya for Americans who may have been exposed and facing backlash for that.
The U.S. took a leading role in the 2014 Ebola outbreak. It's taking a different tactic now. Then, the U.S. sent thousands of trained responders to the affected region and brought them back to the U.S. Now, the White House says they'll send Americans who may have been exposed to the virus and aren't showing symptoms to a facility they're standing up in Kenya. Dr. Dan Jernigan, who led CDC's response during the 2014 outbreak, says the policy discourages aid workers.
If they can't even rely on the federal government to help them get back if they get sick, that is a chilling message for those that are willing to really go and help.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has said the current administration, quote, cannot and will not allow any cases of Ebola to enter the United States. Ping Huang, NPR News.
From Washington, this is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. A landing craft capsized off the coast of Narrow Cape, about 50 road miles southeast of Kodiak, on Saturday. The Coast Guard rescued two people who were stranded on the hull of the boat, and no injuries were reported. According to a social media post from the Coast Guard Arctic District, on May 23rd, staff from Air Station Kodiak were relaxing on Fossil Beach in the afternoon when they saw debris washing up on shore. The Coast Guard personnel, including the unit's commanding officer, then spotted two mariners in distress about a mile offshore on top of a capsized boat. A MH-60 helicopter and crew from Air Station Kodiak rescued the two stranded boaters shortly after and brought them back to town without injuries. The Coast Guard did not identify the name of the landing craft or what caused it to capsize. According to the Kodiak Daily Mirror, the boat was the Stellar One, which was formerly based in Homer and was listed for sale online earlier this year. Leptospirosis is a widespread disease in the lower 48 that can be deadly to dogs. For the most part, veterinarians say it isn't a problem in Alaska yet, but as KMXT's Catherine Irving reports, some vets are pushing to get dogs vaccinated now.
Leptospirosis is a bacterial disease that spreads through contact with infected surfaces, like contaminated water, animal carcasses, or other bodily fluids. The bacteria can infect a wide range of animals, but it's particularly dangerous for dogs. Greg Kloster is the medical director at the Alaska SPCA in Anchorage. He says leptospirosis can cause kidney and liver failure, which can be fatal.
I used to practice down in the lower 48 and saw a couple cases of leptospirosis, and it's a hard thing to see.
The disease can also spread to people from dogs and between infected people. According to Nina Hansen, the attending veterinarian at the University of Alaska, cases are treated very seriously in the lower 48.
So I came from Illinois, where there's Leptospira all over the place. We had them in our ICU. We treat them as a biohazard because we don't want any of the vets or people to get infected.
But when she moved to Alaska in 2007, the owner of the clinic she worked at told her the disease didn't exist here, until it did.
I got involved with a project with Fish and Game, and Fish and Game was actually harvesting some caribou to just kind of assess their health. And one of these caribou, we cut open the kidney, and it was full of pus.
They sent that kidney off for analysis and found it was infected with Leptospira bacteria.
So I remembered that conversation with the clinic owner, that was probably 5 years prior, who said, we don't have it here. And I was like, well, look, we're wrong. We have it here.
So leptospirosis does exist in Alaska. Cases have remained pretty sporadic over the past 10 years, but of every community in the state, Kodiak has had the most. Hannah Harper is a certified veterinary technician at the Kodiak Veterinary Clinic. She says there isn't research yet on why Kodiak has had more cases than elsewhere, but there are a few potential reasons.
Kodiak's very wet, rain, puddles, stagnant water everywhere, and we have a lot of wildlife too. So I think all those factors kind of just increase the potential.
She adds that Kodiak's Coast Guard base brings a lot of people and dogs in and out of the state, so dogs could be bringing the disease from the lower 48. According to data from the State Veterinary Department, a Kodiak dog died from leptospirosis for the first time in 2019, and another Kodiak dog died from the disease the following year. According to Harper, both dogs were staying at fish camps when they were infected. Harper says that they have had several suspected cases in dogs since then, but none that have tested positive for the disease. She says that because mild symptoms of leptospirosis can look a lot like other illnesses, fever, lethargy, vomiting, diarrhea, people might not bring their pets to the vet, and vets might not test for it.
I think it probably has been here. We just haven't had the information, to say positively.
She says the Kodiak Vet Clinic started vaccinating for the disease about 4 years ago. They've made it a part of their puppy vaccine package and recommend it for all dogs who spend a lot of time outdoors. Even though the disease hasn't become widespread in mainland Alaska at this point, the Alaska SPCA also decided to make leptospirosis one of their core vaccines at the end of last year. Competitive sled dog races across the state, like the Iditarod, also require that every competing canine be vaccinated against the disease. Hansen with the University of Alaska thinks that's a good call.
Why not just get ahead of it and start vaccinating our dogs for it before it becomes a big problem? Because it lives in water. And as the climate gets warmer and as we have warmer summers and standing water for more months of the year, I think it's going to get worse.
Other than getting their dogs vaccinated against the disease, Hansen says dog owners can decrease their risk by keeping their pets away from standing water, like puddles and ponds. And if dogs or their owners are showing symptoms, she says to go to a vet or doctor right away. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
At least 18 candidates are vying to be the next governor of Alaska in this year's primary election. One of those candidates is a former state legislator from Palmer, Republican Shelley Hughes. KMXT's Catherine Irving spoke with Hughes and her lieutenant governor candidate Blake Geddes during their visit to Kodiak last week for Crabfest and has this report.
Well, hello, Kodiak residents. I'm Shelley Hughes, and I am running for governor because I think it is very important for us to have a vibrant future. And frankly, I'm concerned we're losing too many young people and things have become quite unaffordable. So I want to tackle that from the ground up. And I'm full of pragmatic solutions. I welcome everyone to look at my website, alaskansforhughes.com. I abhor one-line slogans. I abhor empty promises. And there are very specific things that we can do, an action plan. And I'm ready to get to work. I've lived here 50 years. And I have a handle on the issues from serving 4 years in the House and 8 years in the Senate. Good relationships across the board, both with Republicans and Democrats. And I'm ready to get to work.
So, yeah, I guess for Kodiak, the big topic that people are interested in is fishing. And so there's many commercial fishermen here across gear types, sectors, and the industry as a whole is sort of struggling right now. So I guess how would you propose addressing some of the issues that are currently plaguing our commercial fishing industry?
It's the heart and soul of this community, and it comes with ups and downs. And so I've been listening to the fishermen and some of the concerns they have, and very aware of the challenges currently faced with in regards to trawling. I am blessed to have a person that's on the Board of Fisheries actually as part of my team. I have a strong policy team, and we've been looking at the Fish and Game Department and how, you know, to make things more fair and balanced and science-based. Now, I'll take the opportunity because I have my lieutenant governor running mate, and I'm proud and really happy that retired Brigadier General Blake Geddes agreed to come on board.
You can't just have winners and losers. You have to have a compromise and make sure that everybody is listened to and taken care of. So that really applies to our fisheries. We have to ensure that that one fishery doesn't lose out at the expense of another, or gain at the expense of another fishery. So I'm very interested. I'm not very knowledgeable yet on the commercial side, but I have been asking a lot of questions on the commercial side.
So yeah, our next question is related to our ferry system, which is another big aspect of Kodiak. It's vital for our transportation, especially in the summer. So what is your stance on the Alaska Marine Highway System as a whole? How would you support it or change it?
Well, having lived in Southeast Alaska, I understand the importance of the ferry system. It has the word highway in it for a reason. I think there have been task force and recommendations that I don't think we have really taken seriously and moved forward. And I think we have to look at the solutions that are going to be able to get the a system moving where you can have smaller vessels, maybe more frequent passenger services, larger vessels for the vehicles, and do our best to increase the schedule. And I remember years ago in the 70s and the 80s, you'd get on the ferry and you'd want to hurry and get on so you could actually get a place to sit because there would be so many people on the ferry. We don't see as many tourists on the ferries. And I think if we could promote that, a public-private partnership with the ferries also might be a solution.
And moving on to education, as far as education funding goes in our state, what do you think is an appropriate amount of funding for the base student allocation?
I'm not going to name a particular number. My concern is that I look at the academic outcomes. And the entire time I served, I focused on that. In schools across the state, the average proficiency, that means the kids that are on grade level statewide, is only 30%. That's dismal. In some schools, it's as low as 5 to 10%. That's not acceptable. There have been court cases on that. It should be, you have to target to instructional strategies that are proven and that worked. And so it was actually, the READS Act was originally my bill, which I strategized to be put into a committee bill, which then got folded into the governor's bill and became law. And that's beginning to help our kindergarten through third graders. I also introduced the Math Act before I left, and now that's being carried by Senator Robert Myers and Representative Jubilee Underwood. So when we target the funds toward things like that, it will actually help our children.
And you kind of touched on this at the beginning, but the cost of living in rural Alaska is high and continues to increase with fuel, groceries, and housing prices going up. So how would you focus on keeping that cost of living down across the state?
I'll just say cheap energy underpins everything. So it's going to impact what it costs to run our schools. It impacts the cost of groceries, every good and service. So that's going to help fundamentally over time.
Again, that was gubernatorial candidate Shelley Hughes speaking with KMXT's Catherine Irving earlier this month. You can listen to the full conversation online at kmxt.org. GCI lines went down across the Aleutian chain sometime around Wednesday morning, impacting internet and wireless services in several communities. GCI spokesperson Josh Edge said in an email on Wednesday morning, "The telecommunications company is investigating a potential subsea fiber cable issue." Edge says the potential problem between Chignik Bay and Larsen Bay is affecting the internet and wireless services in at least Akutan, Chignik Bay, False Pass, King Cove, Perryville, and Unalaska. Cell service appeared to be working again in Unalaska as of Wednesday morning around 10:30. Edge says lines have been restored through a backup satellite system. He says the company has teams working with local resources to pinpoint the location of the issue. GCI is also working to troubleshoot the problem and restore services over backup satellite networks. They'll focus on restoring mobile phone service first, then the internet. The Federal Aviation Administration has proposed fining Alaska Airlines $165,000 for allegedly allowing intoxicated passengers to board its flights. Federal regulations prohibit airlines from allowing anyone who appears to be intoxicated to board an aircraft. The FAA alleges Alaska Airlines did so on 11 occasions between February 2024 and February 2025. In a statement, an Alaska Airlines spokesperson said the company fully participated in an FAA audit that investigated policies and practices related to intoxicated guests on board its aircraft. As a result, Alaska Airlines says it made, quote, meaningful changes, close quote, including enhanced training for flight attendants and customer service agents. Alaska Airlines has several options in responding to the notice, including disputing the fine within 30 days. The airline did not say whether it would challenge the proposed penalty. State lawmakers voted to increase state unemployment benefits for the first time since 2009 during the state legislature's race to finish last week. Senators attached the change to a largely unrelated travel insurance bill. If signed by Governor Mike Dunleavy, House Bill 302 would increase the maximum weekly benefit by $100 to $470. It would also triple the allowance for dependents to $72 per week. Future increases in the weekly benefit would be linked to wage growth. Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel explained to his Senate colleagues shortly before the vote that the change would put Alaska just above the median unemployment benefit. About 1 in 50 Alaskans got at least one payment in 2024.
This simply provides a little improvement to a system, a support that you really need when you're looking for a job. It keeps folks housed and fed, certainly doesn't keep anybody rolling in it.
He said the change included in House Bill 302 would not require employers to increase their unemployment contributions because the account that funds unemployment insurance is already, quote, tremendously overfunded, close quote. An official with the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development verified that in testimony to lawmakers last year. Alaska's unemployment benefits would still be substantially lower than in many states, including Washington, which offers workers up to roughly $1,150 per week. Representative Zach Fields, an Anchorage Democrat, said the bump in benefits would help Alaska retain construction workers and other tradespeople.
One of the reasons we've been losing skilled trades workers is they can't make ends meet, and in every other state in the Pacific Northwest, they can earn a lot better wages, recognizing that construction, oil, and gas is inherently seasonal.
The bill passed the Senate along caucus lines, 14-6, and in a wider cross-caucus vote of 34-6 in the House. Governor Mike Dunleavy has not said whether he plans to sign the bill. The thick winter ice of the Yukon River has washed out to the Bering Sea, signaling the end of the breakup season on the Yukon Delta. Last week, communities along the Yukon River experienced ice jam-related flooding. For some, it was among the most severe breakup impacts in recent memory. The communities of Holy Cross and Pilot Station saw water enter homes and, in some cases, cover airport runways. But as of Tuesday evening, significant ice jams close to the mouth of the Yukon gave way and the water began to recede. Michael Ottenweller is the meteorologist with the Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center. He's been part of the River Watch team doing aerial surveys tracking the Yukon River's breakup.
We watched the very last little bit of the ice run that was at one point 40 miles long, and maybe even if you go back a couple weeks, 90 miles long at some points. But we watched that clear out to the coastal areas and past those last villages and making its way out to the Bering Sea.
Overall, he says this year's Yukon River breakup trended toward dynamic, and it was about 5 days later than average, which was expected coming out of this year's frigid winter. Laura Havemeister with the State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management says, though the flooding is receding, the recovery process is still ongoing. She points to Alakanuk, which experienced flooding in some roadways.
We could not make it into town, unfortunately, just because of that flooding. So we're working with the city manager and with the SAR team to really understand those inundation areas.
The team thanked all the community leaders and locals who supported them throughout the Yukon River breakup. Ottenweller, while being interviewed on KYUK's Coffee Talk show, said even in the last days of the breakup, they received valuable data, like some from a community member in Nunumikwa.
And he told me the ice was moving at 14 miles per hour, and I was like, how in the world do you know how fast the ice was moving?
Did
you have a radar gun or something, you know? And he's like, no, I drove my four-wheeler at the same speed as the ice, and it was 14 miles per hour. And I was like, that is incredible, and
amazing.
That is also accurate.
From shuttling the team from the airstrip to providing on-the-ground updates, Havemeister with the state says the community aspect of the operation is a powerful one. The team concluded their aerial surveys for the 2026 Yukon River breakup on Tuesday.
You don't have to go far for specialized care. Stay on the island and turn to the caregivers at Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. Their caregivers are here for you through all the moments in your life, big and small. They provide personalized care that focuses on your needs right here on Kodiak. Friends and neighbors caring for friends and neighbors.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 28th day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose today at 5:23. It will set again at 10:51, giving us 17 hours and 28 minutes of glorious daylight. A gain of 3 minutes and 7 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 75 degrees, set in 2006, and our record low was 29, set in 1914. It is currently 45 degrees in Kodiak with a light rain kind of drifting down, 7 miles of visibility at the airport. They have no opinion about the wind speed right now. The Weather Service says showers are likely, but less and less so as we have partly cloudy skies overnight tonight and mostly sunny skies tomorrow, Look for northeast winds to 10 today, becoming northeast 5 tonight, and turning to the west to 5 or so tomorrow. We have an incoming tide. It's just about high tide. That will happen at 1:38 p.m. here on the east side and be a 6.1-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 6:42 of 12.2 feet. We do have a slight minus tide tomorrow at 7:55 a.m., -0.6. Over on the west side, your next high tide will happen at 1:59 this afternoon, about 2 p.m., and be 11 feet, followed by a low tide at 7:31 p.m. of 3.5 feet. And your minus tide tomorrow in Larsen Bay will happen at 8:21 a.m. and be -1.1 feet. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. North 15 for tonight, today and tonight, 5-foot seas coming down to 4 feet tonight. Look for variable 10 tomorrow with 4-foot seas. A little wind is coming late in the weekend on Sunday, northeast 30 and seas to 7 feet. Monday, northeast 40 with 15-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, north 15 and 3-foot seas today. Variable 10 tonight, becoming southwest 15 after midnight with 3-foot seas. And for tomorrow, southwest 15 with seas at 3 feet. And likewise on Sunday, look for the wind to begin in the Shelikof, northeast 35 on Sunday, 9-foot seas. And on Monday in the Shelikof, northeast 40 with 11-foot seas. In Chiniak Bay, just outside of the city of Kodiak, north 10 becoming northeast 15 this afternoon with 3-foot seas. Northeast 10 this evening becoming variable less than 10 with 3-foot seas. And variable less than 10 tomorrow with seas at 3 feet. And like our other areas, on Sunday, look for a little wind, northeast 20 with 5-foot seas, northeast 30 on Monday in Chiniak Bay, seas at 9 feet. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session tonight in the Borough Assembly Chambers, and that will be immediately followed by a special meeting. That will all begin at 6:30 p.m., On Monday, the Borough Lands Committee will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 12 p.m. And on Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Join the Kodiak Island Borough School District and the Board of Education in saying thank you and farewell to our outgoing Superintendent Cindy Mika. That will be happening next Tuesday, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium foyer. Snacks will be provided. Drop in any time between 4 and 6 p.m. to say farewell. Things happening at the Kodiak Senior Center include next Tuesday's spring cleanup between 9 and 10:30 a.m. Also next Tuesday, estate planning, wills, trusts, and they're having a workshop on that at 2 p.m. led by Deidre Cheney. Call 907-313-0779 for more information about the estate planning session that they will be having that at 2 p.m. next Tuesday at the Senior Center.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.